You are listening to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. We will be coming to you each and every day with uncensored, in-depth analysis of everything you need to know to win your fantasy leagues this season. You can follow us on Twitter, at Fantasy Benefits, or join the Facebook discussion groups, www.facebook.com/groups/Friends of Fantasy Benefits. Give us a 5-star review on iTunes, and send us a copy or screenshot of it to friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com or on Twitter, at Fantasy Benefits, for a chance to get into one of our listener leagues or other prizes. Enjoy the show.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast. I have the esteemed Dr. Dewhurst, Andrew Dewhurst, with us. How are you today, Andrew?
I'm doing great, Chuck. How are you today?
I am fine, but we are not generally a pop culture podcast. This morning we had some interesting banter going back and forth when we realized that we had the show all set. I put a reference to Tone Loke, who started it, one of his famous songs with Let's Do It. And of course, Justin had no idea who it was. Andrew, who is far more cultured than Justin, obviously, at least mentioned that he had forgotten that Tone Loke was ever a thing. So this brought about this issue now that I have, where I really need to, I'm giving Justin a hard time on air here, okay, that we are not just baseball nerds at Friends with Fantasy Benefits, okay? Like, I actually am locally considered quite the music aficionado. And so now I feel the need to explain to Justin, who I know is going to listen to our podcast, a 2-minute synopsis of the roots of rap music. Originally, rap was very political. The Grandmaster Flash with White Lines and New York, New York. You know, one's about cocaine, one's about overcrowding and problems in New York for the black culture. That led to this. There's this one string of rap music that goes, you know, through Public Enemy, through all this pseudo political stuff now. That's Eminem, you know, with the FCC and all this stuff. But anyway, there was quickly an offshoot of the political rap movement that included the Sugar Hill Gang, which was made famous in the movie The Wedding Singer, Alan Dow's version of their song Rapper's Delight, etc., where rap was supposed to be just fun. And an offshoot of that was Tone Loke, whose music, his two most famous songs, were actually written by a gentleman named Young, who became Young MC. So, and that led to this string of rap music that we have now that's like Flo Rida and etc. You know, it's mostly just fun, per se. It's not as political as it used to be. So anyway, so I just wanted to hopefully, you know, give Justin like a little extra culture. You know, he lives in San Francisco. It's a cultural mecca on the planet, and he did not know who Tone Loke was. So how do you think I did with a 2-minute synopsis? Did you like that?
Not bad.
Well, I only had 2 minutes. I am pedantic and pompous enough to think that I could, you know, teach a modern music class without even studying for it, which is a thing. But anyway, I also want to mention, Andrew, do you remember Tone Loke in the movie Pet Detective?
I don't, no.
Oh, my gosh. He plays... It is one of the greatest cameos of all time. Do you remember the movie Pet Detective?
Like Ace Ventura Pet Detective?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay. Tone Loke is this detective that works on the police force that gets extra information for Jim Carrey. And Jim Carrey literally walks up to him and starts talking to him with his butt cheeks and says, "May I ask you a question?" And then finally, like, Tone Loke breaks down and gives Jim Carrey the information. So anyway, so the next time you see Pet Detective, look for Tone Loke. Tone Loke is in that movie. So anyway, but we digress, to say the least, and we usually don't do that here. So we're going to get back to the point at hand, which is we have some players that we're going to cover today, and it's very ironic that this rap roots conversation happened today between us FWFB guys, because today is a throwback episode, meaning I found some players that I thought really went along with what fantasy baseball was like when I first started playing fantasy. Meaning that people that had some skills all the way across the board, but they weren't outstanding, over the top kind of skills. And then all of a sudden, now we have players, You're always trying to draft players who might hit 40 home runs. You're always trying to draft players who might steal 35 bases, etc. and so forth. And I compiled a list of players who actually are these throwback types that are pretty good players all the way across the board. And I am speculating, and I want to know the doctor himself, Dr. Andrew Dewhurst, I want to know his opinion about some of these throwback players. Andrew, give us your Twitter handle, and then let me know if you're excited about today's topic.
Sure. You can find me on Twitter at Andrew K. Dewhurst. And, I mean, I'm excited to talk to you every week. Chuck, it doesn't matter to me what the topic is, but this one in particular, I think, is worth taking a look at.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I've noticed there's some severe discounts to these players because they're not outstanding in any one category. But I will try to make a case for these players being throwback model players, meaning I will tell you, I'll give you a scope of why I wanted to include them in this discussion. Okay, the first player who's on the list and was the first player who came to mind is not the first player that will be on anyone's mind when they step to a draft table, and that is Ender Encarte. His ADP right now on my NFBC site is 111. He's 27 years old. Last year he had 11 home runs. I think he hit like 7 or 8 of them in a weekend. I'm only slightly exaggerating. He had 22 stolen bases, a .304 batting average, with 93 runs scored, and I am portraying Ender Encarte as a classic leadoff hitter. Just the epitome of the throwback leadoff guy. I want to know what you think of Ender Enciarte's value at 111.
I think 111 is way too high on Ender Enciarte. So I did some digging at and looking at one of the things that I did for all of these players is I looked at their speed score and looked at their BABIP versus their hard hit contact and their contact rates. So Enciarte, who's seen his speed score drop down to, it was down to 27.5 last year, which is above average, but puts him in a range that's just below Austin Jackson. So if you think of like those two players as running at a similar clip, I mean, the nice thing about him is, yes, it's above average, but he had a 339 BABIP last year, which is really high for somebody that doesn't run that well. And also, when you factor in that he only had a 22.1% hard contact rate, the average feels questionable when you're looking at it at 304. I think he's still going to be a valuable player, and if he can get on base, he's going to steal you around 20 bases. But I think you're going to see some regression in the average. I think you're probably going to see it come down to 290, 285, maybe somewhere in that range, because the BABIP seems overinflated.
Yeah, I mean, BABIP, these players are not always very easy to gauge, this type of player, because soft contact can actually help a player like this at times, as far as infield hits are concerned, etc. And also, I think they're harder to gauge. Because in this case especially, you don't really know if you're getting any power. I think Ender Encarte is a guy that people seem to be drafting a little higher than I would prefer as well. And I think the reason being is because some people realize that they're so dreadfully behind in speed that they have to, you know, they have to try and catch up. So unlike most of the players on the list today, I'm actually going to agree that Ender Encarte, while being sort of a classic leadoff hitter, is a touch overvalued within this market. I would be a lot more comfortable with him after pick 150. But I actually think he will last there in some drafts. I think he's a guy that have a pretty good variance in when he gets picked, because it'll really matter how much the crowd is paying attention to steals and what have you. I mean, the 93 runs last year was pretty valuable. I don't know how many people think the Braves offense is going to be significantly better this year. Obviously, a full year of health from Freddie Freeman would help. If Ozzie Albies is the Ozzie Albies we saw last year, that would help. If Dansby Swanson was closer to the guy we thought he was than the guy he's been so far in his career, that would help. I'm just curious, do you think, I don't think the Braves catching situation could go any better than it did last year. I'm not sure those players are nearly as good as they played. So I'm curious, do you think the Braves offense will be better or roughly the same at best?
I expect it'll be mildly better. I mean, I'm not sure how much any of that will actually affect Encarte's value, because if he's leading off, I mean, really what he needs is a healthy Freddie Freeman so that he can get on and get driven in. That's going to largely make up his runs total, because there's still not a deep lineup. I mean, Ozzie Albies behind him will, you know, have that cascading effect of, you know, if NCR taking it on and you've got a good, you know, everyone starts seeing better pitches, the better your lineup is, because you don't want to face the next guy. But I think when, in terms of the Braves, you get past probably three or four guys deep and, you know, kind of slides itself down a little bit. So, I mean, obviously you're not going to expect much in the RBI total. He should still score runs. I mean, there's still a major league lineup. I mean, every team's going to score runs. And if you're getting on at 30%+ of the time, or like last 2 years, he's been on base 35% of the time. So it's hard to see that 93 run clip not, you know, being sustainable. Although it does look like Steamer and depth charts have him in the 75 range, which feels a little low.
Yeah, I wonder if they're predicting that perhaps he won't lead off all year. I guess Ozzie Albies is sort of projects as a top of the lineup guy. I also noted that they're pretty heavily invested. I mean, they have him under contract through 2021, and he's appears to be at least more than serviceable outfielder. So I suspect that Steamer's projections in the 70s is too low for the runs scored. But anyway, that's probably, and part of the idea of this player list, by the way, for you people out there, is that these are going to be some players that have not really been spoken of all that frequently. But the next two guys that we're going to cover probably have been spoken about a little more than the rest of the people on the list. Next guy we're going to talk about is Red, as his nickname is known, and that's Justin Turner. He's 33 years old. He had a higher walk percentage than K percentage last year. 21 home runs. He's not a zero in stolen bases. He had 7 stolen bases, and he hit .322 with not a ridiculous BABIP. He barrels everything up. It's amazing. Like, he had a career high 27 home runs last year, the year before last. But the point being is I think Justin Turner might be being undervalued at 78 as an ADP, and he reminds me a lot of a player years ago that would have been a first or a second round pick. So what do you think about Justin Turner?
I like Justin Turner. I feel like he might have been the bane of your existence last year, though. I remember firmly some talks between, I think, you and Justin about you hating that Turner didn't hit home runs very early in the year. But that being said, I'm pretty sure you probably didn't complain about the .322 average.
Yeah, and I owned him in an OBP league too, which, you know, you take that walk percentage and you take
a 4.15 OBP.
If for a guy that, you know, is getting, you know, he's outside the top 10 in some drafts as a third baseman, is semi-redonkulous. I mean, it's really a sign of the times that can even happen. I mean, there was nothing wrong with his stat line last year. And I may have complained because I overly relied on him for power in a league. But in all honesty, it was part of it. The frustration was that he was such a good player, and yet the rest of my roster couldn't help him out, because he really was not hurting me at all. How do you feel about 78? Would you be comfortable getting Justin Turner at 78 for an ADP?
I am. Think about this. So last year, Turner had made contact 85.4% of the time. 90% of that number was medium or better contact. 90% of it. Like, you're thinking about getting a guy that, like, inside of the, like, what was it, 80 plus? And he had his triple slash was 322, 415, 530 last year. And I think if you factor in his place in their lineup, and I think there's some reason to be optimistic that he'll get better RBI and runs numbers this year if he can play more than 130 games. And I think there's a distinct possibility that Corey Seager will not play that as many games. Like, I think Justin Turner could be a big steal in the top 100 this year.
Just because I'm not on this episode doesn't mean you're not going to have to hear my voice. I'm here to remind you guys, if you like betting, I have the deal for you. Eli Rosenfeld of Vertex Betting is one of the best in the business, and unlike many betting information sites, he gives away all his information for free. There is no risk, no signups, no money needed to get the best betting insight in the business. Go check out vertexbetting.com and see why it beats all other sites out there. And if you want to try out betting for the first time, click on the Bet Now link and sign up for MyBookie and or XBet with a $45 deposit, and you will get a $50 rebate from Vertex Betting. Just tell Eli from Vertex that FWFB or Justin Mason sent you for a $50 rebate on a $45 deposit.
Okay, the next player on our list is Anthony Rendon, whose ADP is 54. His age is 27. He is probably one of the most skilled hitters when he is going well in all of MLB. Sort of unlike any of the other players on this list, the one thing about Anthony Rendon, the question about him his whole career, including his college career, has been health. But he is in the middle of an absolutely outstanding lineup. And you know, he's also the highest in ADP of anybody who's on this list. So before we started recording, Andrew sort of mentioned to me that maybe this is the guy who doesn't deserve to be on this list because maybe he kind of is a superstar. But he is a guy that I think people question how valid his power is, meaning that he had never hit more than 21 home runs before this past season. And in this day and age, anybody who doesn't appear to have 30 home run upside is considered a power detriment. So what do you think about Anthony Rendon and his ADP of 54?
I'm in on Anthony Rendon at that ADP, and I have been in drafts already this year. I don't see what there is not to like about Anthony Rendon. I mean, he's giving you know, about 25 home runs. He's going to drive in. He's going to score about 80 runs. He's going to probably drive in around 100. He's going to give you some steals, and he's going to provide you with a, you know, above like somewhere between 270 and 300 average. I'm not sure what there isn't there to like. I talked a little bit about speed scores with Ender and Ciarte. Anthony Rendon is about as fast as Ender and Ciarte. Like, their speed scores are 27.2 for Rendon versus 27.5 for Ciarte. And if you're not familiar with that calculation, that's feet per second. So that's nearly identical. So just think about that speed, which means his BABIP is reasonable at 314. And he's another guy that makes, when he makes contact a lot, much like Justin Turner, you're looking at, of his overall contact percentage, 87-ish% of the time that it's medium to hard contact. So I think there's a ton to love about Anthony Rendon. And he's definitely a guy I think that's worth looking for at third base.
Yeah, the one thing that has stunned me so far with Rendon is obviously Rendon has an unbelievable hit tool. He was generally considered the best bat in his draft class. But he did have some problems with injuries when he was in college. Then, of course, we had some initial problems with injury way back in 2013. Then 2014, he played 153 games. Then 2015 was an injury-marred season, and he ended up playing 94 games total between, you know, minor league rehabs and full-blown. Now, the last 2 years, he's played 156 and 147 games. So is this the classic situation of you're injury-prone until you're not, and maybe he's not injury-prone anymore? It's sort of hard to tell. As good and as steady as his plate discipline skills have been, last year was also the first year that his walk percentage was above his strikeout percentage, something he shares with Justin Turner, which is a phenomenal thing, a 403 OBP. So if you play in an OBP league, he's a beast. He's just a guy that seems, both Justin Turner and Anthony Rendon are getting lost in this very top-heavy third base class. To me, you know, with a lot of guys are taking Machado, and they're getting Machado and Arenado and Chris Bryant, some of these studs up at the top. Jose Ramirez coming off a fabulous season, and then all of a sudden there's sort of this semi-lull, and in the middle of this semi-lull is Anthony Rendon, and when the lull ends at third base, then you get to Justin Turner. So I think maybe their ADPs are victims of that scenario going on, and also, you know, they're getting drafted at a point where you're starting to wonder if you've loaded up enough in the early rounds in power and speed categories, which is not their forte, even though they're not hurting you in those categories.
Yeah, and the thing about Rendon, and I think this is a generalized thing that we do in the fantasy community, is we get really hung up on the word injury sometimes. I think we have to do a better job of understanding the difference between what's a debilitating injury and one that will continue to cause the person to decline in a way that was not previously expected, versus kind of the bumps and bruise style injury of like strains and things like that. Because I think far too often we discount players too much because they're quote unquote injury prone. Like Giancarlo Stanton was injury prone because, you know, he had bad luck. But, you know, for those who held with him last year, you certainly have been rewarded. And I think Anthony Rendon might be that style of player where he's dropping much further in drafts than necessarily he should be, because people have falsely applied this tag because they've been burned by it in the past.
Well, I also want to mention that I was completely stunned. Like, I would have disagreed if someone had told me this, okay? Anthony Rendon had never hit above 287 in the big leagues before last year. Now, for a guy with his hit tool, that's pretty ridiculous. Like, that seems like a very odd circumstance. It seems like something I don't believe. Like, if somebody had told me last year was the first year that he hit over 290, I probably would have told them that they're on illicit street drugs. Like, he's a far better hitter than that. This, I'm only tempering, because as a base analogy, I completely agree. First of all, I love the Nationals lineup. Second of all, I love sort of this all-around, not-going-to-hurt-you-in-anything ability. But at the same time, he should be a 290-plus hitter on a regular basis. Should he not? Do you agree with
absolutely.
That?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, his speed score combined with how hard and how consistently he makes contact tells you that, like, there's no reason to think that he shouldn't be hitting, like, at a 285 plus clip year over year.
Yeah, and even with that, I mean, I would assume, I mean, he hasn't had a ridiculous BABIP year. I mean, 321 is his best BABIP to this point for a guy who can run pretty well. So the point being is that before I looked at his stats, if somebody told me, you know, has Anthony Rendon ever hit 315 or has he never hit more than 287, I'd have said, well, he must have hit 315 at some point. I mean, that's just, he has that presence at the plate. Him and Justin Turner, I just want to mention, like, they remind me of the third base version of good Daniel Murphy, you know, which is pretty high praise, and they're going at a far lesser clip than Daniel Murphy was going at sort of at the height. I guess Daniel Murphy has maybe had a touch more power at times, But the point being is that they have those kind of contact skills, which is so hard to come by. I mean, you know, if you're worried, like, you know, some of the guys in the early rounds, we have some concerns about batting average. You know, the Clay Bellingers, is it Clay or Cody? I get them mixed up.
It's Cody.
Okay. The Cody Bellinger type, even Giancarlo Stanton has struggled at times with his batting average. I mean, if you get some of these batting average guys, then it seems like Anthony Rendon and Justin Turner should be right up your alley as far as being able to even out some concern that you may have about batting average. Because these guys have a very, very high batting average floor. I would be stunned if either one of these players hits below 270. Would you agree?
Yeah, the only way I could see them hitting that low is if they got off to a slow start and then got injured.
Yeah, or if they'd have to completely change their approach, which I have no idea why they would do, being as successful as they've been.
I think you're looking at like some sort of injury that they're playing through. If you see them hitting really poorly like that.
All right, the next player that's on the list also reminds me of a throwback player, and I was surprised his ADP is 129. So I'm going to be very curious. I was on this guy very early in his career and was disappointed a couple times. And he's only 26 years old now, and he is Eddie Rosario of the Minnesota Twins, who in his own way kind of had a breakout season last year. He was sort of looked at as a fourth outfielder in a lot of circles before last year's breakout. Now, you know, last year he played 151 games, 27 home runs, 9 stolen bases, with a .290 batting average. He did significantly cut his strikeout rate from 2016. He went from almost 26% to almost below 18%. So that's a pretty nice clip of improvement. He's not a guy who walks a lot, so I'll be curious, because Andrew is a guy who really delves into these contact rates and what have you. What do you think about Eddie Rosario at pick 129?
I feel like 129's probably about right. Like, I think you're paying for his production last year. The part I would be concerned about is how much do you believe that production will come back again this year? Because you just haven't seen him perform like that in the past, right? I mean, he hit 27 home runs last year. Before then, he'd never hit more than 13. And that's even in 122 games. The Twins are young. They have four functional outfielders. Like, there's no reason for them to, I mean, there's no real depth concern there. So hopefully, I mean, I think you could have a situation where if he didn't play well, then you may lose a little bit of time to somebody like Danny Santana. But I mean, that could be across the board, minus, I think, Buxton, because of his defensive capabilities. Rosario runs well, so the speed makes sense. He has a 27.7, so he is just about the fastest in this group. Which makes his 312 BABIP sensible. You've got 51.6, 31.7 medium and hard hits, so he's hitting the ball hard better than 82% of the time when he's making contact, which is just 78%. So I think it's reasonable to think, based on last year, that what he did was legit, provided that his profile, for whatever reason, doesn't change. And I wouldn't expect that from a 26-year-old. So, I mean, he's kind of getting into his prime. So, I mean, if you can get 27 home runs, 80 runs, 80 RBIs, and I think the Twins are a team that people don't believe in from last year, in spite of them making the playoffs. So, yeah, maybe take advantage of that bias if you can, because everything looks like they should be continuing to point up.
I mean, obviously we'd like him to walk a little bit more. You know, he's got, a less than 6% walk rate. So in OBP leagues, he's going to take a hit because he's going from, he had a .290 batting average, but he only had a .328 OBP, which isn't outstanding for a guy that you might have to take as early as this. In the OBP category. But we've seen some steady improvements, and this is a guy that I tend to think was pressing a lot earlier in his career because rarely was he getting regular at bats, or did he know he was going to play on an everyday basis? So I think there is definitely some advantage here. I don't know exactly how well he handled lefties last year, but when you mention four outfielders and I see, you know, a left-handed hitter, that's definitely a red flag that he could, if he starts to struggle, he could fall into sort of a platoon situation. But I do think I was a little surprised to see him at 129. I think you'll see he lives in relative obscurity, not really known as one of the best hitters on his team. So I do think there's a pretty decent chance that he'll fall quite a bit further than that. And I would certainly watch for that. If you need outfield stabilization, as far as someone that certainly seems like he's not going to hurt you in any area, which is pretty easy to get to when you need four or five, sometimes six outfielders, including utilities and bench spots, etc. So I think Eddie Rosario is a very interesting case study for this year. So the last person that we want to talk about today is a throwback sort of in a different way, and he's the lowest ADP guy that we have in our group, and he's also been very speculated upon to be a trade candidate this entire offseason, and yet he still remains with the Pittsburgh Pirates, and he is lovingly known on the Jolly Roger broadcast as Jay Hay, which is Josh Harrison, who, you know, was spent a lot of his major league career sort of just trying to earn a spot on a roster because he is sort of the roster glue of a major league club. But in recent years, he was signed to a relatively good contract for him, 4 years, $27.3 million with two option years added on. But the point being is that Jay Hay is a guy now who I strongly believe has one of those relatively high batting average floors. He's also double-digit steals is very, very likely in every scenario. You know, he's had double-digit steals in each of the seasons since 2014, which is helpful. He doesn't always offer a lot of power, but last year he had 16 bombs in the juiced-up year that it was. And he hits 272. So I'm curious as to how you feel about Josh Harrison.
I've loved Josh Harrison for years. He's always been a guy that I've gone and targeted because of his multi-position eligibility. Because there's been many times where he's been second, third, and outfield eligible, which is always great, especially if you're playing in daily leagues, because you can get him into the lineup almost any time that they're playing. Overall, from just looking at the profile, I mean, if you want to talk about a guy that you wish could walk a little bit more, when 5.2% is the best you've done in the last 5 years, I think there's still a little bit left to be desired there. But, I mean, I look at, you know, he's the fastest of the group based on speed score, yet his BABIP was down 20 points last year. So I think there's some room for that 272 average to move its way back up into the 280, 285 range that is in line with his career norm of 281. The power is, I mean, 16 was his career high, so I don't know if you should be expecting much more than that. I mean, 13 was his previous high in 2014, so I think, you know, if you're looking at 15, that's probably safe. I mean, overall, the biggest concern you're going to have about Josh Harrison is that he plays for the Pirates, and there's not a lot of reason to necessarily believe that they're going to score a lot of runs, so that's largely, I think, going to mitigate his value. But overall, Josh Harrison's a guy I'm more than happy to have on my team this year.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. When you watch Josh Harrison play, the one thing that comes out is, I mean, dead nuts, the dude's a baller. I mean, he's just a baller. I mean, they've loved him in Pittsburgh because he's done things like, you know, hustled so hard that he's gotten himself safe in the middle of rundowns. He's been a backup at shortstop. He'll play center. He'll play third. He'll play second. Get him on the field. If you asked him to, he looks like he enjoys the game so much that he would literally play catcher if you asked him to. You gave him a day's notice and said, hey, you know, we're in a jam. You want to catch tomorrow? He would catch. That's what it seems like. And so he is about as likable player as there is in the entirety of Major League Baseball, despite the fact that he's not one of the most skilled players in Major League Baseball, which is, of course, it's a lovable entity in and of itself. His ADP is all the way down to 267 right now. I think some of that is uncertainty about where he was going to be. I mean, there was a rumor for a while that he was getting traded to the Mets, which that hasn't happened, and certainly seems like they've moved on from that. Every Major League team could use Josh Harrison. And every Major League fan base would love to have Josh Harrison in the fold. And I think that says a lot of great things about him in and of itself. I also think, you know, it's the opposite. Via the same week that we're trying to figure out why Yasiel Puig's agency dropped him for behavioral concerns, we have Josh Harrison, who seems like he lives for his days, his time's out on the baseball field. And I just think that's ironic. I mean, we don't know what you're going to get out of Puig. Can't run the bases right, this, that, and everything else. You get 1,000% out of Josh Harrison, and that's just enjoyable. That's worth having on your team if he just goes through his career numbers, in my opinion. I think something that's lost in fantasy baseball sometimes is the enjoyment that you have from owning a player. Like, if I truly don't like a player, I'm okay passing up on that player because I am not going to enjoy following him throughout the season because I strongly dislike the player. Okay, and so Josh Harrison is the opposite of that. Chris Archer to me is the opposite of that. He's like one of my favorite presences for a pitcher. He's got a mound presence, etc. Marcus Stroman is like that. There's players, and the beauty of it is it crosses all ethnicity lines. It doesn't matter, you know, I'm a white guy. It doesn't matter what color the person is. Like, they're just enjoyable because of how much they like the game. It's the Ken Griffey, sort of a Ken Griffey spirit, either a bulldog fighter spirit or this Ken Griffey, I'm out here playing baseball and I love it spirit that Josh Harrison has. So I'm very much admire Andrew Dewhurst and the fact that we both have this natural tendency to enjoy Josh Harrison just adds to it. So that's Josh Harrison's agent should have just been listening to me speak about Harrison. You agree?
Absolutely. Or maybe you should try taking on the job of his agent.
It just amazes me sometimes. And like I said, when you listen, when you've seen as many Pittsburgh broadcasts as I have, through the MLB package, you can tell that he is just beloved with completely, entirely through the clubhouse, all the way through the broadcasters, and there's something to be said for that. There really is. I mean, what we think of as average people with, you know, sort of average life skill sets, if we had a skill set to be able to play Major League Baseball, we think that we would enjoy it as much as Josh Harrison does. And I think that's a really neat thing, and that's always a good thing to have on your roster, even if your roster goes to hell and dies a burning death throughout the season.
And I think, like, the other really positive thing I think about Josh Harrison is at that 267 ADP, like, your worst case scenario is what, that he stays in Pittsburgh for the entire year? Like, he's definitely, like, he's the kind of guy where if his contract is movable, like, isn't he the prototypical guy that you're looking to add to your team to make a playoff run? Yeah. Because he can play everywhere. You know he's not going to be a problem in your clubhouse, so you don't have to worry about, like, creating problems. Like, I just see him as a guy that's that may find himself in a better situation. So if you're somebody who plays in head-to-head leagues, that, you know, there might be some upward value coming closer to the end of the year. And at the same time, you know, if you need a guy to pick things up in the later half of your roto league, if you play in one that allows for trades, Harrison might provide you that almost a next to nothing cost if you're willing to make that speculation, probably around the All-Star break.
Yeah, it's really an interesting situation because, like I said, not only do you have his already deflated ADP at 267, but you also have this tendency that we've pointed to on this podcast for people to want guys that will be unbelievable in a category. And that is not Josh Harrison. I mean, I get that part of it. I really do. But at the same time, you got to have players that you know you're going to get decent production from, and sort of Josh Harrison's that bottom guy in ADP where you're like, okay, well, I'm going to make sure that I reclaim something in across the board generated statistics, and that certainly seems what Josh Harrison is. I mean, Josh Harrison's never scored more than 77 runs. Okay, Josh Harrison has never driven in more than 59 RBIs at the major league level. So if those are the reasons that the ADP is deflated, and I certainly get that. But I do agree with Andrew that he could end up in a much better spot. He does work out good as a guy who's played all around the diamond in the past and is likely to do so again. So, I mean, there's good things to say about Josh Harrison. I don't want my elation over how he plays the game to overinflate his value with you guys, because he is a guy who you're not looking to build an offense around. But he's an enjoyable guy to own, and I do think that he still has one season in him where he's going to surprise in some categories and be better than he has been more likely than anything. If anything is not, he's had over 20 stolen bases before, and maybe he's a little longer in the tooth now. Maybe that's not going to happen again. But all the other categories are categories where I think you could see him have his best career totals may be in front of him. I think he's going to hit more than 16 home runs in a year. I think he's, et cetera and so forth. So you can tell I'm a little excited about Josh Harrison, even though I don't own my first two drafts. I do not own a piece of Josh Harrison yet. So anyway, I thought this was an interesting concept, and I hope you guys are enjoying the concept base. I would appreciate some feedback on Twitter. I'm Chuck Anderson. I can be reached at Just Chucking It. Most of the feedback from my friends who listen regularly really like this sort of concept-based podcast. That is sort of my baby. It was sort of my idea, but I think Andrew has been very supportive as well, and Justin. So I just want to thank all the listeners out there for listening to us again, and we are a weekly festivity these days, so hopefully you will start looking forward to hearing from us early in the week, every week. Other than that, we just got all our rankings done. I'm waiting patiently for the Great Fantasy Baseball Invitational to be done. I'm also finishing up in the last two rounds of my first 50-round NFBC style draft, which I love my team, and maybe we'll spend some time getting into that on a future episode. Andrew, what are you working at? And tell people how to reach you again. And let's get out.
Yeah. Again, you can find me on Twitter at Andrew K. Dewhurst. I may, in fact, not be a real doctor, so I'm working at that. working at Weekly Hockey Article, Weekly Hockey Podcast. So if you're looking for information there, looking forward to getting started on the Great Fantasy Baseball Invitational in now just a few weeks. As well, hoping to get our staff roto league going, which is going to be interesting this year with, I think we're 18 deep, so that should be a good time.
I've been trying to figure out, like, if my team falls apart in the Great Fantasy Baseball Invitational, I'm trying to figure out if I actually could get, like, some self-deprecating credibility out of finishing dead last out of all of those analysts.
Somebody's got to do it.
So anyway, I don't know if I find it high pressure or not. Yeah. A side note, I'm not thrilled with only being able to pick up players once a week. I don't like that with the new DL. I've vocalized that incessantly, but I'm going to do that in just one league. That league being the Great Fantasy Baseball Invitational. So anyway, as usual, kudos to Justin Mason and Mike Werner and Matt Thompson and all the people that make it possible for us to be part of FWFB. And thanks so much to the listeners out there, because we really enjoy having you as followers of our work. So thanks so much for that. This was the throwback episode. If you wanted to learn about classic rap, I sort of threw some of that in there for you. I mean, how wide of a level of entertainment could people ask for, Andrew? I mean, this is pretty spectacular, is it not?
Yeah, I mean, the value per dollar on this is through the roof.
That's true.
Like, per minute, you just can't get better than this.
Exactly. And I can't imagine all the eye rolls that are out there right now. But anyway, thank you so much for the listen. We appreciate it. We will keep pumping out quality fantasy baseball work for you, I promise. This is the Throwback episode, signing off.